This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Prime Minister of Great Britain, Rishi Sunak, the headline in the London Times, ends golden era of China relations with jibe at predecessors. Of significance here, this is the Prime Minister acquainting us with tension within the Conservative Party, the Tories. The lead reads, Rishi Sunak has declared an end to the golden era of relations with China as he accused Beijing of sliding into ever greater authoritarianism. In addition, the Prime Minister criticized his predecessors in number 10 for being naive about the risk from China. As he said, the Communist Party's reaction to anti-lockdown protests showed that increased economic integration with the West had failed to result in political change. I welcome Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's based in London. He writes political economics. He's also the author of the book, The Theft of a Decade. But we begin right now with a surprising turn of the tables. Rishi Sunak accusing China of authoritarianism, but suggesting his predecessors, and that would be Boris Johnson, Theresa May, and David Cameron, I could go back, being naive. Joe, a very good evening to you. Is this a big topic on the telly that one prime minister of the same party tears into other prime ministers on the biggest subject of the moment, which is the Chinese disorder? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Well, I mean, there has definitely been a certain amount of interest in this China approach that Rishi Sunak is talking about. And I mean, that itself is actually pretty interesting if you think about it, because there is a lot of economic distress and political and policy turmoil going on in the UK. And yet China does seem to be cutting through that. And this is actually part of a longer running discussion that's been going on within British politics and the British government, going back a few years, but it especially heated up over the summer when Rishi Sunak was in a contest for the leadership of the ruling Conservative Party and for the prime ministership with Liz Truss. And remember, she got the job back then, held on to it for about 6 weeks, and then got pushed out, and Sunak came in. And over the summer, one of the criticisms of Sunak was that although he was making rhetorical gestures to taking a tough on China approach economically and politically and strategically, that maybe he didn't mean it. And in fact, that argument is resurfacing now that he has talked about China policy again, because even though he has said that the end of the previous golden age, when the focus was all on booming commercial and economic ties and increasing trade and investment and all of that, even though he said that that era is ending, there is some concern among China hawks within the ruling Conservative Party that actually Sunak has not gone far enough in adopting a hawkish approach. And so I think that this is representative of a bigger realignment on China that is going on in the United Kingdom and also in a lot of other parts of Europe right now, too.
I did not mention Liz Truss, the 44-day-long prime minister. I do want to repair that by saying that according to the headlines that ran at the time, this is earlier this year, September, October, Liz Truss was tougher on the UK-China relationship than her immediate predecessor. So this is a debate that will continue. But I want to call on Joe's experience, because he was many years for the Wall Street Journal in Hong Kong, and he's observing the disorder that we have from the reporting about the protests of the COVID lockdowns, about young people in the street holding up blank pieces of paper. He's observing this from the experience of living in Hong Kong during an earlier iteration of protest for the authoritarian regime in Beijing, called the Yellow Umbrella or the Umbrella Period. This is 8 years ago. Joe, did you see anything similar or dissimilar in the video that we have from China, the handheld video of these protests, to compare to your experience in Hong Kong?
Well, so I think one of the similarities is that there has definitely been a youth involvement, so far as we can tell. And I think that it's notable that a lot of, the protests that we've seen in China over the past few days did seem to be happening around universities, university campuses involving university students, which is a pattern that you saw a lot in Hong Kong in the umbrella era, you know, starting around 2014, where it was really young people who were particularly involved in the protest movement. So I think that that is certainly a similarity. One interesting difference is the what people are protesting about. So I think that the Hong Kong movement it tended to be about, it would be about specific pieces of legislation and the like, but certainly the ideals were a bit more sort of abstract. You know, Hong Kongers protesting for freedom, for democracy, that sort of thing. What's interesting about the current situation in China is that the thing that they're protesting now is much more concrete. They are unhappy about the zero COVID lockdowns and the consequences of that and the role that the government has had in implementing that specific policy, which really affects people very dramatically in their daily life. Do I know what this difference between the protest movements means? No, but I do think that it is kind of interesting that that happens to be the thing that protesters in China are coalescing around right now.
Your memory, Joe, was there a sense in Hong Kong at the time of the umbrella protests led by young people, very young people, as I recall, was there a sense that this was high risk, that the pushback could mean the end of our educations and our freedom? Did they talk like that?
Well, it was an interesting situation in Hong Kong in that era because, I mean, people definitely understood that the authorities would probably end up wanting to take a pretty aggressive policing approach to cracking down on those protests. But one of the things that was still the case in Hong Kong at that time is that people felt that there was a pretty clearly delineated sense of one country, two systems, which would allow Hong Kong the autonomy or the separateness from mainland China to be able to have that kind of protest. And in fact, that was one of the shocks that arose from the umbrella movement in 2014, was this realization that actually the police would come out with the tear gas and, you know, would actively try to suppress some of the protests. I think that that was something that became a factor in the protest then, and then hung over subsequent protest movements in Hong Kong. But I do think that, certainly there will be a very great awareness in mainland China that people are taking a big risk, particularly because the things that they are chanting, the slogans that you're hearing, the whole orientation of the protest is directly criticizing President Xi Jinping and the top echelon of the Communist Party regime in Beijing for their policy mistakes to do with zero COVID. And I don't think that anyone in mainland China, idealistic student or otherwise, is going to be at all, in doubt that, you know, waging that kind of protest carries substantial personal risk.
2019 was the scene of the large protests in Hong Kong, repeatedly, night after night, confrontation with police, racing around, tear gas, fires being set. You observed this from your London post. Did you have a sense of foreboding witnessing that, Joe?
Yes, I mean, I think looking back on subsequent protests in Hong Kong starting in 2019 and then through the whole process with the national security law that Beijing foisted on the territory to suppress dissent, I think that because of the very heavy-handed approach that the authorities had taken starting in 2014, I think that people were aware that the risks were much higher, that the legal jeopardy was much higher, that the physical danger from the police was much higher in those Hong Kong protests. So I think there has definitely been a change there over the years. And the thing that ties the Hong Kong protests together with what's happening in Beijing, in China now, is the fact that Hong Kong has, the approach has become much more of the mainland approach to suppressing dissent. And in fact, we're coming up soon on the trial of newspaper tycoon Jimmy Lai in Hong Kong, who has been charged under the national security law in Hong Kong for what is amounts to free speech and journalism, either supporting the protests or even just reporting on them. And so I think that has been a very damaging turn in Hong Kong that we're probably about to see a form of repeat in the mainland.
About Mr. Sunak's remarks about the golden era, I learned from the New York, from the London Times, the golden era, that's a quote, was a phrase used to describe a period of rapprochement with China led by David Cameron and Chancellor of the Exchequer George Osborne that sought to strengthen the UK's trade links with the world's second largest economy at the time. The zenith came in 2015 when President Xi was invited to the UK on an official state visit. Mr. Xi attended a banquet at Buckingham Palace with the Queen and was pictured drinking a pint of IPA with Cameron at the Prime Minister's local pub in Oxfordshire. Have those pictures popped up on the telly or the newspapers yet, Joe?
I think that people are preferring to forget that that level of engagement happened. But remember, it didn't stop with Prime Minister David Cameron. And in fact, there had been the sense running up through the Boris Johnson era when a certain gentleman by the name of Rishi Sunak was the Chancellor of the Exchequer. There was still the sense that post-Brexit Britain was going to rely on closer commercial ties with China in order to boost trade and investment in the British economy. And there have continued to be episodes of Chinese investment that in the UK that are becoming more and more controversial. But also Chinese, British universities tend to be very dependent on tuition income from Chinese students. There's a lot of Chinese investment in the property market in the UK. Rishi Sunak seems to be intent to pretend that he was not at all involved in any of that, despite having been the Chancellor of the Exchequer responsible for economic policy for a couple of years. So I expect that there is going to continue to be a certain amount of controversy over what is the appropriate British policy toward China and who is or is not responsible for having gotten the country to this point.
I'm speaking with Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes the political economics column. He's based in London. He's also the author of the book, The Theft of a Decade. When we come back, there's more trouble in the Tory party than who said what to Xi Jinping. There's a windstorm. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bashman.